Okay.
Hey, would you bring in the police? A couple of things I wanted to note before we get into public comment. First of all, we appreciate the invite from WFFA to attend their annual meeting, but if board members would please let Patricia know if you're going to attend, and if then we reach the magical number of 7, I'll let Phil talk about what happens.
Well, as you all know, the Public Meetings Act is triggered when more than a quorum or more of you are meeting. Is this on? Obviously, Patricia's going to keep track of the numbers. If more than 7 of you want to attend, we would notice that as a special meeting of the board, even if you're not convening as a board to do anything because it's related to your work. So we would do that, and I think we've done that on other events of an educational nature for the board in the past. So that's consistent with board practice. We just wanted to remind you.
So we're not discouraging them from attending.
Correct.
Okay. The other qualification I wanted to mention from yesterday's field trip, I just wanted to note that Steve Harris talked about his fuel reduction folks. I want to be really clear, those are grant and state capital money funded with specific purposes. Any landowner assistance they do is very minor in that. I mean, ideally, we would want them to do more, but they're not funded to do that. And right now, currently, the state is only funded with 2 landowner assistance foresters for the state. So just to drive home the point, we still have a lack of support there. Okay, public comment period. Kevin Godfrey.
Thank you, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. My name is Kevin Godfrey, and I'm with the Warehouser Company. I thought I'd just follow up from the last meeting in August and talk a little bit more about Watertight and the importance and the significance of the company. When you get the handout in a minute, I'll try and summarize here, but yeah, what I wanted to provide you is kind of a little more in-depth assessment of how we go about doing our survey program and how it's well aligned with the PHP process that you're embarking on. So we've been trying to find this regulatory point for quite a few years, and I've got a lot of experience. And what we do employ is sort of a two-part test, and I think that's where the PHP process needs to go, which is that you have to ask the question, is the habitat accessible to a last detected fish? And then second, is the upstream habitat suitable or similar to the habitat associated with the last fish detected? Sometimes you hear, hey, if it meets physicals and it's connected, that's the only test. Well, that's just a one-part test. What we've been doing since 2002 board decision and over time is that you have to ask yourself the question, when you find that last fish, you kind of go to, is the habitat that could potentially be used suitable? And so that's where the ideas of you have to have a permanent natural barrier or some significant change in the physical stream characteristics, i.e. stream gradient change, a decrease in stream size or a junction of some type of confluence. And so I think as you continue to have this conversation and the PHP group needs to determine that, keep that in mind that those three factors are critical and that what you're trying to do is you just can't have a one part, it's accessible, take it to 15% gradient, call it good. It has to be accessible, but it also has to be suitable. And one of the handouts that I have is a Watertight mod form that we submit to DNR, and it's kind of the Warehouser Field form. And on that form, what we do is we look at gradient width and then channel confinement, and then we look specifically on where we found the last fish, and then upstream of that. And the one particular example, when you get a chance to look at it, is an example we encounter all the time, which is we have a stream that is a side tributary of a fish-bearing tributary to the Kalama River. So it's really one of these side tributaries. And so again, it's accessible to a fish stream, but when you look at the physical criteria on that stream, it's very different than the main stem. On the main stem where we found a fish in that case, you know, the channel is between 8 and 10 feet wide. On the side channel, it's between 1.5 and 2 feet wide, so significant change in size. Gradients goes on one case from, you know, 5 to 6% down to a 3% gradient. So you're seeing, you know, a substantial change, and then channel confinement is different. So it's a much more complicated process than just, you know, simply is it accessible. And I think, you know, we've been well served with that type of a program. Just quickly, since the last 4 years, well, between 2012 and 2016, when we've been out in the field doing that, on the streams that we have sort of upgraded from non-fish to fish, we extended that distance in about 474 cases out of over 2,000 water type mud forms. We added an additional 34.8 miles of fish stream. And so when you're using this, you know, approach, you know, you're going to get the results that you're trying to find. So again, I'll finish up and just, you know, recognize that, you know, accessibility is important, but, you know, it has to be suitable and it has to be similar to the fish bearing waters in order to make the PHBs practical. So thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Kevin. Steve Bardemar.
Good afternoon. My name is Steve Barnemeyer. I'm a small forest landowner, and along with Ken Miller, I represent Washington Farm Forestry and Small Forest Landowners at PFW Policy. Later this afternoon, Mark Hicks from the Department of Ecology will be presenting the Clean Water Act Assurance Annual Report. One on page 4 of that report is information about, quote, the off-track status of a milestone. That milestone involves preparation of a summary report assessing the progress of small forest landowners in bringing their roads in compliance with best management practices and any risk to water quality posed by relying on the checklist RMAP process for small forest landowners. Mark comments that, quote, satisfying this milestone no longer seems feasible. Rather than potentially putting Clean Water Act assurances at risk, Washington Farm Forestry Association offers and stands committed to working with DNR and Department of Ecology in identifying and implementing alternative methods to successfully address and complete this Clean Water Act milestone. Thank you for this opportunity to provide public comment.
Thank you, Steve. Mary Skirla.
Good afternoon. My name is Mary Skirla. I'm the Denver Fish and Wildlife Policy Committee representative for the Conservation Caucus. I have a couple of comments. One goes to stream typing reviews in the 2018 field season, and the other to work on rule and board manual. As you probably know, we are optimistic about our progress towards completing the work that the board has directed to develop PHBs under the fish habitat assessment method. But we also know that we will be using the current method for the upcoming field season, and we have some concerns and some ideas about how we might handle that. We urge DNR to increase the rigor of its stream typing reviews in this field season to address some of the issues that we have long believed to be present and which we have some confirmation of, given the extensive review of water type modification forms that has been going on. So we just like to suggest that there are measures that DNR can take. One example would be a new form. We have learned a lot in recent months to confirm some concerns about the lack of specificity in documentation. these, I think a new form is needed to improve data quality. Secondly, we would like increased attention to ensuring consistency with current direction. A key example would be the use of default physical criteria already in rule where appropriate, specifically unless interagency consultation occurs, electrofishing above man-made barriers. The locate the FM break is not consistent with current guidance, but we believe is routinely occurring. We also urge you to consider requiring affirmative concurrence from at least one other agency on some of these approvals to increase confidence in those decisions. On a separate note, we have some concerns. We urge the board to ensure that the staff work on the rule and board manual 23 is not entirely delayed until the PHB criteria are set. It seems to us there's substantial known quantities in terms of the elements of the stream typing program that the board has had approved now for some months, and that we as stakeholders would be prepared to assist the department in starting to develop the rule and board manual concepts prior to your February meeting, which it seems to me right now is the sort of start point of the work in earnest on those items, which we have a concern puts a lot of work, both internal work at DNR and stakeholder engagement, which as we know can be extremely time consuming, between February and May. So just in the hopes that we don't hit any roadblocks to meeting our deadlines on getting the new system in place for the 2019 field season, we hope you'll consider some of those issues. Thanks.
Thank you, Mary. Great, yes.
Jared Banath, Board Member of Strayheads, Council Tribe in UCAD. You probably already know why I'm here. I delivered a letter earlier, so you had a chance to read it before I spoke today. But as of the close of your meeting today, I'll be done. I sit here a little bit torn in that, as an ant, I don't quit. So I think we should view this as a temporary hiatus, but we can't continue to participate in an unaccountable system. We can't enable that continued opportunity for bad behavior and not forward moving. So we won't participate in policy anymore until things change. So we look forward to the changes that are coming with the subcommittee and to the consultant and whatever processes the board takes on at this point. But we feel very strongly that we've given you the right roadmap. And some things probably could have been done a little quicker, not just by the board, but by stakeholders as well. So we didn't take this very lightly. But I'll tell you what it means. It means we're not going anywhere. We're still going to be here. We'll still work with any stakeholder that wants to solve a problem in this program. We won't do it through the current process, but we'll bring it here to the board for final action and decision. So we will be challenging the board directly from this point forward with our issues and concerns for action and not through an unaccountable process. So we will hold you accountable and we will challenge you. So with that, we will see you and a quarter.
Thank you, Ray.
Oh, thank you.
Karen Volger.
Good afternoon, Chair Burnett and members of the Forest Practices Board. For the record, my name is Karen Terwilliger. I'm a senior forester with the Washington Forest Protection Association. And I appreciate the opportunity to testify this afternoon. I'm mainly going to have comments related to water typing, which is probably not a big surprise to any of you, and particularly the report that we just heard in terms of the potential habitat break process and progress. We are very heartened by the fact that the Forest Practices Board has taken on the responsibility in making sure that the adaptive management science-based process is utilized in developing potential habitat breaks, a fish habitat assessment methodology, and a new permanent rule for water piping. We appreciate that. We also very much appreciate the strides that have been made in terms of making the process more transparent and getting more communication out to stakeholders and to caucuses. We do appreciate that and know that that is a significant step forward and will hopefully alleviate some of the confusion that we had in August about how the process moved forward. As I've stated before today, the fish habitat methodology, assessment methodology, is a significant step toward meeting a fish habitat objective compared to the current rule. It is a clarification of the field method to assess fish habitat. It is not a renegotiation of the standard by which that's going to be set. Overly precautionary solutions are inconsistent with the board's stated expectations, forest and fish report, and the habitat conservation program or plan. As Mr. Gabu specifically spoke to, access does not necessarily equal habitat. Access and to suitable habitat is what we're looking to deal with. And the language in the habitat conservation plan and the forest and fish report is habitat likely to be used by fish. Fish habitat is generally described in the definition in 222.16.010, but there is a lot more detail that has to go into that conversation regarding the standards for which that habitat standard is based. Accuracy, balance, and understanding how the change in the rule or the assessment methodology will meet the public resource protections and the economic viability goals. I want to call your attention to the BIOP, and this language was actually in the National Marine Fisheries Service's biological opinion. And it says, it is assumed that any methods to use to map or delineate fish-bearing waters will have an approximately equal probability of identifying waters as fish-bearing where fish do not actually occur, or the reverse, identifying waters as non-fish-bearing where fish actually do occur. It is further assumed that such errors will be relatively small and largely offset at a landscape scale. This assumption is based on the fact that this concept of equal error probabilities was inherent to the Forest Practices Habitat Conservation Plan. The fish habitat assessment methodology will be a framework to provide for the consistency and reproducibility for protocol field surveys. But again, as I stated just before, it is not a framework for renegotiating the core elements of the forest and fish report or the habitat conservation plan. Water type modification form data provide a reasonable way to assess potential habitat break definitions against current interpretations of fish habitat made by surveyors and regulators, but they are not a standalone means to determine the extent of fish habitat. This information is the best available data and information that we have. It may not be perfect or ideal, but it's the best that's available at this point in time. There may also be information from various similar studies that have been done that can be helpful in this process and should be incorporated into the development of the PHBs. Some stakeholders have expressed significant concerns about this data. And that is why I think in the board's wisdom, you originally decided that a validation study of the potential habitat breaks would be necessary. Now that validation study, as Mr. Birch talked about this morning, is going to take some time. But that is absolutely critical to moving forward in terms of a durable, legally successful rule in place in the future. As you probably will guess, there are still long-standing and widely varying interpretations of what success or fish habitat look like. And those differences over the next few months are going to need to be resolved. I commend the board for taking on this activity. There's going to be a lot of work that has to be done by stakeholders, caucuses, and the board in terms of developing the next step in terms of the PHBs, and then ultimately the new rule and board manual. In my written comments that will be submitted to the board, I've also included information about the landowner or WFPA data set that was developed for the August discussion. And you will be able to see is essentially the same testimony that I gave last time. So, is there any questions? If not, thank you very much.
Thank you, Karen. Jay? Jamie Glasgow.
Chairman Burnett, members of the board, thank you. My name is Jamie Glasgow. I am representing the Conservation Caucus as a technical advisor. I also want to talk about water typing and PHBs and the FAM. I, like Karen, want to start with my appreciation for how this process has been working since August. We have seen a big change in engagement of the caucuses and transparency of the PhD science panel's work, and we very much appreciate that. Not only are we having opportunities to meet face-to-face more often, but Hans has made it very clear that his door is always open to us whenever we have questions, and that means a lot because we do have questions. We do ask that that you encourage the AMPA to use the water type mud form data that are being mined for PHB development with caution, not specifically to develop the PHB criteria with those data, but to inform their development with consideration of other best available science. A single recommendation for the best fit criteria, as was presented to the board in August, is likely not appropriate as we move forward. We heard from Hans that the PhD report that the board will receive in mid-January will be very similar to the last report, but we would like to support and reiterate board member Sweden's interest in a PhD panel report for the board that provides several alternatives using PhD criteria, not just one recommended alternative, and that for each of the alternatives that are provided for PhDs, the report should provide an explanation of the risk and uncertainty the board, so that the board can make an informed policy decision. In this way, you and the board can address shortcomings in the water type modform data that were used to inform the PHB. So when you make that policy decision, we urge you to be appropriately risk averse. The criteria you select for PHBs will determine the effectiveness of the FAM in identifying type F reaches that are occasionally used by fish or that will be used by fish once conditions in those reaches improve. We urge you not to lose sight of the permanent rule objectives of reducing electrofishing and identifying habitat that may be used by any fish at any time of the year as defined in WAC 222-16-010. Glad to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Jamie.
Thank you.
Mark Hicks. We're transitioning.
Yeah. Not quite. Did I sign up for something? Yeah. I can make it up real fast.
Good afternoon, Chairman Burnett, members of the Forest Practices Board. I appreciate you putting me on your agenda. It's been a long time since we've had a chance to talk about the Clean Water Act assurances and the Crescent milestone. If you'll indulge me, I'm going to take us on a little trip back into time, though. I know there's enough. I was thinking that some of you are relatively new, all things considered. And then, of course, the other people in the audience may not actually know what the assurances are. So, let's see if I can just kind of back up a little bit. So, I'm going to get a little history on the assurances, talk about recent accomplishments, which, yay, that's a good thing. And then talk about some issues that are on the horizon, not such a good thing. So, we'll go from there. So, as part of the 1999 Forest and Fish Report, Ecology offered and scheduled into what are known as the Clean Water Act assurances. And we did this in concert with the support of the US EPA, but it's primarily an ecology action because it's using our discretionary authorities under the Clean Water Act to offer these to the landowners. And part of it was to give some sort of confidence to landowners that they could have essentially some predictability in the rules, how they would be applied on the landscape and how they would be changed over time. So that's all built into these assurances. Under state law, the forest practices rules are to be developed or changed such that they will come into be in compliance with the state surface water quality standards, as well as the Federal Clean Water Act. Ecology's assurances, what are the assurances, what do they do? It's actually a fairly long list, but I think the key part of it is that state's forest practices, rules, and programs as updated through a formal adaptive management program will be used as the primary mechanism to bring waters, forested waters, into compliance with the state water quality standards. The original agreement would establish a 10-year check-in period to determine if the assurances were working, if waters were on track to being in compliance with water quality standards. As part of the 2009 check-in, that 10 years later, Ecology identified a list of concerns that stood in the way of being able to simply reauthorize the original assurances. However, after a lot of soul searching and conversations with stakeholders, the agency recognizes the underlying value of such a well-established program, with everyone with processes and people at the table committed to actually follow adaptive management. So instead of pulling the assurances, Ecology conditionally extended them for another 10 years. That extension was based on the program's meeting a list of date-certain corrective milestones. The purpose of the milestones was to create a path of steady improvement, both to prioritize research that would actually test the rules that affect water quality and make sure that they're working, as well as to encourage process changes that would make the program more dependable and efficient in actually going through that process. Since 2009, Ecology has provided the board with regular updates on progress being made to meet the milestones established for retaining the Clean Water Act assurances. Our last update was in August 2016, so we're a little over a year now past that. As a result, I have some accomplishments that I can actually point out, which I think that's really good. Since our last update, the TFW Policy Committee has restarted work to develop guidance for identifying the uppermost point of perennial flow in tight NP waters. DNR has taken steps to arrange an independent fiscal and performance audits for the adaptive management program. And they've also established a sampling program to assess compliance with the unstable slopes rules. And they get extra credit for that because that was originally supposed to be a research project under CEMER, and they realized it was more of a compliance-based project, and they voluntarily took it off the CEMER ledger and brought it over to DNR. So they weren't really ready to start that, so there were some delays in them trying to get up to speed and actually how they were going to build that into the existing compliance program. They've done that, and now it'll be part of their regular program. CEMER has began to scope a landscape scale mass wasting study that's been essentially due for a very long time. And they've completed scoping and as well as completing a draft study design to examine the effectiveness of the rule identified landform criteria. And they've completed scoping and is working on a study design for a forested wetland effectiveness monitoring study. So there are things moving. And as you already know, the research program is very busy, and it's just getting things out the other end that's a real challenge. Ecology is particularly pleased with the tight end hard rock study that has been approved by both CEMER and the independent peer review process, and that its companion study in soft rock is on track to being completed in 2018. These are real high priorities for Ecology, and it's really good to see them moving towards the finish line. So, and while progress is being made on a number of other projects, you know, that's just, you start to get to be a long list to talk about here, it is important to note that there are some other projects, such as the Eastside Type NP Effectiveness Monitoring Project, which we were hoping would be moving at the same timing as the soft rock study, are still a long ways off schedule. So, I've brought that to the board before, and it hasn't really changed. It's in a different step, but it's still a long ways from actually having a finished study design and actually being implemented. And then it takes many years to finish it. So it's a long ways off schedule. I do want to say that when Ecology was putting together the Clean Water Act corrective milestones, they were initially set so as to distribute the workload across the science advisory groups and across time in order to try to make the workload and the cost something that could be managed. So they weren't, they were, there was an intention in how they were established, as well as to try to get certain answers to appear at about the same time, like all the type N studies coming in the same decision windows. Unfortunately, delays in advancing projects, not just the Clean Water Act projects, but other projects in general, have caused upsets in the overall schedule, how CMER would actually carry out its work plan. The remaining clean water milestones are now in a situation where they are being essentially scheduled and kind of overlapping one another and other projects during a period of time when project expenditures are projected to exceed our revenue. Some people call it a fiscal cliff. I'm not sure if it's a cliff exactly, but we do clearly have some issues that we're going to have to resolve in terms of the budget and our expectations for a project. Yeah, in response, policy has assembled a project prioritization subcommittee to make recommendations to prioritize projects and to potentially make alterations in them in ways that will actually make sure that we can stay in the black in the longer term. It might be useful for you all to know that Ecology has in the past and will continue to consider changes to the Clean Water Act milestones and their relative priority. Where doing so is based on new information that comes in that's consistent with the goal of prioritizing research to examine the effectiveness of the rules in protecting water quality. We've done it in the past and we'll do it in the future. That'll probably come into this prioritization step that is policy is going to have to face and make recommendations to you eventually on. However, it's also important for me to note that to the extent that Ecology agrees to changes in the milestones, the corrective milestone projects based only on our shared need to manage the budget to come into the black rather than new information that the project is no longer needed or no longer is capable of providing the information we need, those budget-centric changes that we might agree to would not be viewed by Ecology as satisfying the original milestones. So just understand that. Part of the reason for actually establishing all those milestones was to encourage progress and efficiency, a lack thereof, then causing us to drop the milestones would be a problem for us. But we will always be partners and cooperative partners at the table to try to keep it, whatever we have going, working as well as we can. Yeah, that's all I have. Any questions?
Questions, Mark?
Okay.
I actually read your report.
Did you? Okay.
Yeah. So I noticed, and I've been informed, of course, by my own staff, that the logjam on the type N board manual is sort of broken, and that there's an opportunity to actually complete that work. Do we have an idea when the board might see that solution, you know, it's conceptually the logjam's been broken, when that might come to the board?
That's a good question, but I'm not the one to answer that one.
Okay. That's a Hans question.
Or a Mark question, that's a DNR staff.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. It's a staffing question.
So I think that the decisions, the recommendation has kind of been agreed to within the policy, and it needs to now move forward.
Okay. All right. Maybe I'll ask the co-chair or something. The other question I had, and it's not a question actually, it's a statement. I really appreciated Steve Barnemeyer's, we really welcome WFFA's interest in solving the small landowner road issue and the clean water milestone. And so I would hope that my staff, you, and WFFA would take some time between now and the next meeting of the board and see if we can come up with some constructive process to move ahead on that one.
No, we really appreciate his statements as well, and it's obviously been one of the harder milestones in terms of how you actually get it done. And it was starting to look like the barriers are insurmountable, but obviously we're more than happy to sit down with DNR and the Small Forest Landowner to see if there is some other path to get there.
Great. Thank you. Any other questions from board members? Yes. Board member Sweeney.
So I always appreciate this presentation and your report, and I find the whole concept of clean water act assurances fascinating. And and I think I've asked this before, but at least this time I remember that I asked.
My answer is the same.
But I think all of you that operate in the adaptive management program on a regular basis probably have it in your heads about how the milestones relate to the actual clean water standards. And at some point in all your completion time, I think it would be helpful for all of us, and maybe it's helpful for me, but I'm hoping it's helpful for the other board members, is to come up with either some kind of crosswalk or some sort of explanation about these particular milestones. I mean, I get where they fit in the overall adaptive management program and the particular studies, but sometimes it's not necessarily intuitively obvious how they relate to the actual water quality standards that we're trying to make sure that the program is achieving. And so some way of explaining that to us at some point in the future, I would find helpful.
Other people would like that as well.
Okay.
It is more complicated than it sounds. If we had just done something that was only a college centric, we would have asked to remove half the research programs around the country. Right? And so you wanted a healthy adaptive management program as well, which includes all the goals of forest and fish too. Mm-hmm. And the stakeholders brought almost every one of those research projects to the table and had already prioritized them. We just changed a little bit. The rest was actually already agreed to as necessary for everyone to have a healthy adaptive management program, which is one of our underlying goals. This wasn't meant to only be a 10-year, well, maybe someone thought that originally, but that was silly, I think. But, you know.
It was you.
Oh, it could be.
But previous one.
So we were actually trying to, that's why we're trying to accomplish other things other than just meeting the water quality standards in this. And so we're trying to honor some of the other agreements that had already been put in place, the other processes that had also been put in place. But those were dragging as well, and those were eating up more resources than they should have as well. And they were interfering with the ability to move from one project to another and get the answers, work together, and then say, what's our next highest question? So we prioritized some of our biggest questions, yes, but we also brought in all the others because it's all about having a system that works. That's why I was trying to say that it isn't just about expediting water quality-based projects. It's about fixing the underlying problems in the program as well, so we can all have confidence. We want this program to be on a glide path. We don't want to keep getting into series of milestones. We really want a program that works so well we could step away from it and it would still result in producing the answers that we all need.
I appreciate that answer quite a bit, but it sounds like you would still be willing to do some crosswalking and even identify, like,
yep.
These studies are more about making sure the system's working well and they don't correlate to a direct standard. Even mapping that out would be helpful.
Yeah, I even have a draft just sitting there, so yes, I would be willing to do that.
Thank you. Then my second question is, perennially, I mean, it's great to see progress, and it's nice to hear you reflecting back to us that the program is making progress and some of these big milestones are being reached. But for the ones that aren't, I'm interested in either your sense now or as part of this report, what are the implications? So for instance, the East Side had been effective as monitoring, so that's several years off from being done. We're only a little over a year out from the 20-year anniversary, right?
And yes.
Right. So if there are things like that, and type N, I can envision what the direct relationship is between how effective type N buffers are and some of the water quality parameters. So what are the implications of not meeting that, both in terms of your sense of continuing on with clean water act assurances, and I can guess at the answer on that one, but more just like, what are the resource implications of sort of not having those answers, and if it's gonna be several years, are there interim things that we should be thinking about, that the whole program should be thinking about to ensure water quality standards are being met when it's gonna be years before we sort of have some of these particular milestones achieved.
So we have a lot there. One of the ones I kind of keyed in on is kind of a catch-22 in a way, in that, you know, you talk about resource implications, and we haven't done the research to figure out what the resource implications are, so I think, you know, it's kind of a can't answer that. I think that we are approaching the end of this second 10-year period, and there are things that have not been accomplished, and that are important, and there have been projects that have been delayed along for a very long time, and that's left us in a more challenging budget situation. Ecology will have to sit down with itself here soon and start having conversations, which will, of course, expand to cooperators. I don't know folks that were here in 2009, but we do talk with cooperators about this issue when we have to make decisions, and we will continue to. But that's a decision that'll be elevated, and I don't want to start having to guess what the agency's position will be once it pulls all the information together.
I would see this report potentially as a predecessor to your 19 review, probably. Similar to what we did in 06 and 09, where we...
That could very well be.
We had a letter that went out and said, okay, here's our shortcomings, heads up, 09's coming soon. And in 09, we did a full evaluation. And there was stakeholder involvement in both of those.
So in 2009, I know the director reached out to all the key principals and other players in this program. And one of the things that he was trying to do at that time was gauge commitment. Some of the things on the table that's coming in front of us, trying to see if we can get that recommitment to the program, for example, looking at where can we get more process improvements, how do we get people to share, you know, the original goals, which include working together in a cooperative spirit to really test the rules, and use science, sure, policy too, but use science as a foundation to queue up those policy conversations. To the extent we can still move towards that in this next year, that means a lot.
Questions from other board members? For Mark?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark. Okay, we're going to go into the staff reports. I wanted to take some time and actually ask, since the Westside proposal on it, Westside template proposal initiation came out, I thought it would be good for Mark and Haas to come up. And could you guys give us an update on what's going on with the PI? So this wasn't originally on the agenda, but since it came out as part of the public comment, I thought it would be good. To the extent these guys are prepared to report to the board on what's going on and give us a little history on that.
Okay, so good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the board. I'm Mark Engel, and as you heard earlier today, the WFFA did bring forward a proposal initiation to the board, which the board accepted, for a West Side low impact template. As part of their proposal initiation, they followed all of the elements that were listed within Board Manual Section 22, which is the Adaptive Management Program Board Manual. And so they brought forward proposed prescriptions, description of what they wanted to do, and they also provided science to support their prescriptions. The board remanded that to policy through the Adaptive Management Program Administrator, who also followed the board manual and reviewing the proposal, answering certain questions, and then bringing forward to policy proposed recommendations or a manner in which policy could review the template and bring back recommendations to the board for further actions. And the proposal to policy, which policy accepted, was to take both a policy track and a science track in evaluating this proposed west side of the Pat Templer. Policy accepted the recommendations and formed that subgroup, a policy subgroup. The subgroup was to first address those policy issues and then also to help put together how we would review the science. And I will address the policy aspects, and then Hans is going to address where we are in the science review. Just as a reminder, a template is an alternate plan. It's an alternate plan where certain prescriptions are used frequently enough and reviewed through ID teams that the prescriptions become commonplace. They're used over and over and over again. Or it could be expected that when you put them into a template that a small forest landowner could just follow the guidance in that template and fill it out, and that when they turn it in as part of a forest practice application, that it would be a viable alternate plan which had been with prescriptions which had been used frequently, and it would be expected that you would not need another ID team in order to evaluate and approve that forest practice application. So the subgroup, when we look at it from a policy perspective, we have to look at it in two ways. First, look at all of the prescriptions and determine how close each of those prescriptions are to the existing forest practices rules. We started there, we did that. This template is very complicated. It has some overall prescriptions, and then within each prescription there are alternatives where you can make further decisions. So it's kind of like a layered approach. It also was proposed to be applied to riparian forests that are both of conifer as well as hardwood. So it was very inclusive. It was to try to address virtually all situations that you would encounter in Western Washington. The committee also initiated a review of all existing alternate plans from small forest landowners in Western Washington. I believe it went back 5 years. And again, specific to Western Washington, and then we began to compare how often the prescriptions as identified in the proposed template had actually been applied on the ground through existing alternate plans. That process it took quite a while to get going because it's quite detailed. And it's not as simple as just looking at FPARs. You have to dig deeper to find the ICN, the informal conference notes, to make sure that we could see documented that the ID teams had looked at the prescriptions and that they were concurring with them. But we also need to find those that were very similar to the prescriptions that were brought forward in this proposed template. We're not quite done with that, but we're most of the way down. Okay. So it has taken a while. There was a lot of work involved. Very detailed review. And we also wanted to look at all three aspects, how close they came to rule, how close they come to existing alternate plans that have been applied on the ground. And then the third aspect, that is a review of the science in support of the proposed prescriptions. And for that, I'll let Hans go.
Good afternoon, Chairman Burnett, members of the board. My name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator. So the only backing up just a bit point that I would make is February 2015 is when this PI came to this board. And at the time, Chairman Everett and the board directed me to bring back recommendations by the next board meeting, which we did. And in talking to policy, the thought was this was a simple exercise, and by October 2015, policy was going to be able to take over a big chunk of this and make a lot of progress, and it was going to be straightforward. Well, then what happened was the subcommittee of policy subgroup got into the weeds and looked at how complex this step really was. And so at that time, when we made that report to the board, there wasn't that knowledge. So this has taken a lot longer than expected because there were so many parts that Mark talked about. So Mark covered the policy track. Now what I'm going to talk about is the science track. In that original response to the PI, science track was looking at a updated literature review and synthesis on repairing functions. That was the scope of the science track. And at the time, there was some other work being done by the Department of Fish and Wildlife on the priority habitat species, where they were looking at contemporary literature for a bigger effort, where there was a subset of those that were germane to the forested environment and these functions. So we were hoping to make use of more of that. The scheduling didn't really line up as well as we had hoped. And you know, there are different purposes, and so we weren't able to use that as much as we had hoped. And so we did go out to a contract to have this riparian synthesis done. Now, at the same time as that was in play, the subcommittee asked for an additional step to evaluate some questions that they had about the science used to support the template. And so a list of questions was put together by that subcommittee, and that was appended to the contract for the riparian literature synthesis that went out. So we went through the bid process, selected a contract in Northwest Management to do both of those parts. One part is a product specifically for the subcommittee to complete their work. The second is a product for the adaptive management program with this wider value of an updated riparian synthesis document that is going to go through CMER and the regular process through policy and into the board as a product for the adaptive management program. So where we are in terms of the status on the science track is the contractor is working on a draft of the literature synthesis. That's a pretty straightforward effort. As the second piece about with respect to the questions that the policy subcommittee asked, the contractor put together an initial draft, shared it with the subcommittee. It wasn't what they needed in order to make their evaluation. So we went back to the contractor and have asked them to make a number of substantive changes. And we've amended their contract within the 10%, or the 10% of the budget discretion that policy had. And added some additional money to that contract in order to get the product that the subcommittee needs in order to make a determination. And right now they're drafting, the subcommittee's going through some questions that the contractor asked back for clarification, and they're hoping to they've got another meeting coming up next week, and they're going to go through those questions and provide answers to the contractor. And the contractor isn't going to be able to make progress on that until probably toward the end of November through December, and then we're hoping to have something back from the contractor after the first of the year. Following that second draft to the subcommittee needs to ensure that it is in fact what they need to make the determination. Once it's determined that those questions were answered, the subcommittee has decided that they would like to send this to ISPR to get a third-party review of the answers to those questions. And so that's going to add, we talked about peer review for the PHB study, this is a similar issue. So there's going to be some time required to work back and forth with ISPR. Now these questions, I think there's, 20 questions. So it's not a full-blown study, so it should go fairly straightforward at ISPR in terms of a review. But we don't know what that's going to look like. And so what we've done is we've extended the contract with Northwest Management for these two products through the end of 2018, so December 2018. Both products will be completed within that time frame. We believe the questions, the policy, the subcommittee's work on evaluating the template and making a recommendation to the full policy committee would happen much before that time. Probably looking at summer, I would guess.
Yeah, so to be clear, the next meeting is on the 21st of this month, and we are going to finish reviewing the questions. We had a fairly extensive meeting with we're being very deliberate in review of the questions, making sure that they're exactly, you know, asking exactly what we would want from the contractor. And very soon thereafter, we're going to have to have another meeting and to address the first two issues. But the all three parts, review of the prescriptions as to, you know, how they compare to the rule, as well as review the prescriptions as to those that are, have been frequently and commonly used through existing alternate plans, as well as the supporting science to the prescriptions. All three aspects need to be done for us to fully evaluate this template. And it has taken considerably more time than we originally thought. And a lot of it is just due to the complexity of the template. It really is a very, very comprehensive template, but it's one where you have to evaluate each step.
So if I were to guess, it's going to be like next November before we have an answer.
Right now we have it as May. We set the draft 2018 work plan before our last meeting. I think November would probably be a more realistic date because of the fact that we're going to take it to ISPR for review. But we hope that within the next calendar year that there will be a report back through Commons to the board on policy recommendations for how to address this type.
Questions from board members? Thank you. I'm just going to comment on a couple of these. So as I mentioned earlier, we put off bringing the compliance monitoring report and the ISPR review of the report, and hope to bring that to you in February now. We didn't want to bring the guy over to this meeting because of distance and so forth. And then Ray and Scott, do you want to come up? I know we have a memo and our materials from you, but I saw there was something about a handbook.
Mr. Chair and board members, thank you. Yes, we took you literally and went out and compiled all of the guidance material that policy uses or has developed over the years. We've had it adapt through the entire policy committee for changes or additions, and we pretty much came up with the 9 items that are in the handbook that will be made for each individual caucus. And they'll basically have a tab that they can add any other materials in that are relevant to their caucus. So as people transition through time, there's a consistency piece that every policy committee member will have now as they move forward. They can pass that along to time.
So living document. This is a living document, and we'll be looking at it as we move forward to decide whether the procedures that we have in place make sense still, or if we need to change something as we move along. So, but we do have one. We actually have one for each one of you. We left most of them in Olympia, though, so you didn't have to carry them back across state for most of them. Sorry, maybe I should give this one to Brent instead of to you.
There you go.
So I'll do that.
Thank you.
I can approach.
Well, thank you.
So not only will you have one of these, each policy committee member will have this one. So it'll be something that lives with them for their tenure and beyond. And as we update through policy, different procedures, and updates, so those will go into the handbook as well.
Thank you for that, because that was part of our
low-hanging
direction to you about low-hanging fruit at the last meeting, so we appreciate it.
Right, if we can continue to jump around a little bit in our update, we did take you seriously, and we've been participating in the subcommittee's meetings that they've had to understand and know what some of those things from Hans' report on the adaptive management program, trying to get to a point of getting improvements, and we're starting to do those things that as we go along. We are moving into our December meeting. Part of that time will be a chance to be working together on looking at how we can reinvigorate the TFW principles. As you can tell, it's not always going to be rosy. We understand and appreciate the fact that we have nine different caucuses with different positions at any given time on any given thing. So we'll continue to work on trying to improve the program as we move forward. I think that both of us are committed to that, even though I know, and after Ray was up here earlier commenting, also he's standing or sitting here next to me right now as a co-chair, and will continue to support us as we move forward. So I do appreciate that, even though I also understand the position that the tribe has made. And so anyway, we'll continue to move on with the program. There was another thing that was involved in the update that I wanted to bring forward, and that was the fact that we did get to a consensus. And I don't know if you would go ahead and talk on that.
I could. Yeah, so another piece of good news. Policy was able to sort of take the type N issue and pass that forward for as a consensus to start that board manual process, with the caveat that during the process with board manual 23 encompassing both F and N, if there were issues that were related to rule, that those would be brought forward in that context through the stakeholder process. So we've gotten that off our plate as well, which I think is a huge milestone for policy.
It is, and so for the newer board members, just to remind you what that was all about, I started bringing it up earlier and didn't provide any context. But going back to like 2006 or so, it was a while ago, we were very close to having a board manual then on type N and how to identify the uppermost point of current flow. And then after a field trip to Northwest Region, the board chose not to adopt a manual, and we've been trying to figure out how to get past the issue of how you, what kind of guidance you provide to landowners to abide by that rule when you're outside of the dry season. And so I appreciate that we finally broke the dam on that one. Yeah, I appreciate that a whole lot.
I think if any accolades need to go out on that piece, I believe the large landowner caucus and conservation caucus were key in kind of getting us to that point, and their ability to collaborate on this outcome.
Excellent. Thank you. Anything else, you guys?
Yeah, just one more thing to note, that I think one of the largest tasks at policy at this point, and through this biennium, is going to be reconciling priorities and budgeting. As you know, the master project schedule is full, if not over full, through this biennium and into future bienniums. And those hard decisions are going to be in front of policy at this point to sort of get through. And I think those processes are starting to bear some fruit. And I think, you know, unfortunately, you know, I feel like I'm bailing on Scott here. But I've already told them that no matter what, if they need support, I'd always be there to back them up and do whatever I can to kind of help. So we're still here. We're still going to collaborate. We're still going to work. We're just going to find different ways to do it.
Thank you. Any other board member questions? Co-chair. Board member Davies.
I just want to thank you for this handbook. It looks really great, and I'm going to read it.
We hope all of our we hope all our caucus members read it too.
Yeah. Right. And I just wanted to ask if you imagine that as part, Ray, of the tribe's re-engagement would be something like redlining this or making additions to some of these guidelines to help keep the process on track. Is that the kind of some of the changes that you're imagining?
No, I think I think our letters at this point that have been given to the board over and my testimony over the last year and a half, focusing on accountability and the program, I think they're hardwired, needed, necessary changes to the functional process so that we can vet the human beings in the process and have accountability measures in place to give tools to the co-chairs in the future, but no matter who they are, the ability to challenge individuals when they do break from the guidance that we have, the good guidance that we have, to follow. And right now those tools don't exist because, like we've pointed out, the board doesn't appoint policy members. We have no accountability to you. We're self-appointed. There's no blessing on the co-chairs. There's no way to do those things. So I don't have any tools in my toolkit to hold people accountable. And if they don't want to follow the good guidance that's been developed by our predecessors in the form of the TFW agreement and the principles behind that, we're stuck. And so it's a people problem. And without accountability, we can't solve the people problem.
That's helpful. I just, in some of the rule language is in here, and that's what I just wondered if you meant.
Yes.
Some changes to that. Okay.
I think our previous letters were very clear that we felt that there were rule changes that were necessary in order to build accountability in. And that's what we're looking for.
Any other questions from commissioners? Okay, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Before we go to the local wildlife update, I was wondering if the Seamer pictures could come up for a second. I just have one question, you gentlemen. Just giving us an update on the PSM updates, the protocol standards, and
Ash is still here, and Ash is actually the group, our leading the subgroup that's working on the PSM updates. We did update, I think I told you once before, the Chapter 7, which was some of the processes that we deal with, and now we're moving towards the Chapter 8, which is dealing with.
Exactly.
The review process. The ISBR review process. And so, that was one of the recommendations that came from the subcommittee, and as we noted during that, that group was going on, that's kind of an ongoing thing that we're constantly doing. These things have updated, we've learned from other processes, we're constantly incorporating those into our PSM through a subgroup.
Okay. Questions from board members? Senior co-chairs?
Maybe if I could add one thing. Chapter 7, we have project managers now where years ago we didn't have project managers. So we've got a bunch of different components in the senior program and the SAGs that we didn't have, 5 years ago that were really moving the way they are now. So it's a fluid document, I think Ash would agree. It's fluid. We have approved Chapter 7 that we now get to test all these new pieces. So I don't think it's done, but it's done until we have something to go back and modify. So
just to note that some of the changes that we're talking about from the TWIG process and things that you're considering here and some of the recommendations that have been put forward for you to review already, we potentially have updates that we would need to make again to the project plan standards.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Make sure you introduce yourselves.
Sorry, he calls out as the senior co-chair. Doug Hooks, senior co-chair.
And Todd Baldwin, senior co-chair of Council Tribe.
Thanks, guys.
Sorry about that.
All right. Stacy? So I'm asking Stacy to come up. She's our new policy rep. We don't know whether she's permanent yet, right, from State Fish and Wildlife. But I asked her to be prepared to respond to any questions about the update that was provided on wildlife and the thing. And I particularly, when I was going through my materials this morning, realized that we're missing a page out of the memo.
Oh.
And in particular, the piece that I was most interested in was the fact that, at the very top of the memo, it talked about where we were with the uplifting of Marble Marillette, and then it went to the links, and that was the page that was missing. And the question I had for Stacy, to the extent that she knows and is fresh and new to this position, is whether we're making good progress working with landowners on their landowner plans around the links.
Hi, good afternoon, Chairman and members of the board. I'm Stacy Polkowski with DFW. Gary Bell is hunting and Terry Jackson has been retired, so you're stuck with me today. And I do apologize for the omission of page 2 on our report. And to get to the question of where we're at with the links, we are still taking that voluntary protection approach. DFW staff are collaborating with the landowners to evaluate and refine the links habitat management plans on state lands and private industrial lands. We're also working with the academic partners, Canadian entities, Fish and Wildlife Service, conservation organizations and tribes to look at those recovery actions as well. Gary Bell is our point person on that, and he is making those contacts and getting some FaceTime with those entities. If you would like more information on that, I can definitely have Gary elaborate in our next staff report.
Other questions from the board members on the wildlife update? Or member Sweden.
So still on the links topic, my understanding that part of the process of updating those landowner management plans is that there's been some new science since the last time they were updated. And if so, is that something you can touch on briefly?
I apologize, Paula. Board member Sweden, I'm not privy to those details. That's definitely a Gary Bell expertise. So I couldn't answer that at that time.
So maybe since we'll be in Olympia in February here, you can be prepared to answer that question. Any other questions from board members for Stacy? Thank you very much, Stacy. Appreciate it. Okay, back down to our last item. So, as you know, and it's not a, sometimes we rush through this item, but at this meeting, we actually have to pay attention to this item because what we're doing is we're talking about what we're going to do for next year. And so, Mark, would you please walk us through what you've got for us.
Good afternoon again, Mr. Chair, members of the board, and Mark Engel. I'd like to start with the 2017 work plan. For both the 2017 and the proposed 18, a lot of it is somewhat redundant. I'm not going to go through virtually every step, but I am going to take pause on elements that we've put in that the board
that we need to discuss, and this is a decision item for the board. It's your work plan. It's a living work plan. You need to approve the next year's work plan. Plus, before the end of the calendar year, we need to post in the state register your meeting dates for next year. The chair's already offered that there'd be a two-day meeting in February. But before I go there, on the 2017 work plan, we actually did very well. But I want to point out there's a number of things that have been moved onto the 2018 work plan. The first, as we just talked about, was the Small Forest Landowner Western Washington Low Impact Template. I'm not going to discuss that anymore right now, but that will be moved. Another is the compliance monitoring 2014-15 biennial report. It historically has been given in August. I believe starting this next year, we are looking towards the May meeting. And so we'll talk about that in a minute because we already made a mistake there. But the report from this year has been pushed back a number of times. This time it was pushed back because it didn't make sense to bring Aaron from Olympia just for a 20-minute presentation in Spokane. So that will be at your February meeting, and will be reflected on the work plan. Another thing to point out is board manual development, board manual section 23, which is the protocol to locate the map divisions. That's the board manual section 23 is a two-part manual. Half of it's to address type N waters, the other is the type F and break. That manual is going to be moved to August of 2018 because the board, by tradition, adopt rule. That's the meeting at which we have projected the adoption of the water typing system. When you adopt the rule, then at the same time, you approve the board manual section, which provides guidance in order to implement that rule. So that will be moved. For rulemaking, we moved all three of them onto next year, which was on the 2017 work plan. So the first being the water typing system, that will be moved to August, to your August meeting. And then the electronic signature and payment, as well as the public records, which you just addressed this morning, we can now combine those two into one rulemaking. With your action today, staff will file the CR-102, which is the start of the formal rulemaking for the fee schedule. We'll bring both of the public hearings together for both of those rulemakings, and those will be brought before you at your February meeting. So, any questions on that so far? Okay. So now we're moving towards the calendar year 2018. Again, this meeting will need to acknowledge and approve your meeting dates for next year. On the cover memo, or the memo that I gave as part of the work plan, the dates listed there are the dates that would be where the meetings would fall according to the board's rules. That would be February 14th, May 9th, August 8th, and November 14th, one-day regular meetings. However, the chair this morning offered that perhaps the February meeting should be a two-day meeting. So I'll pause there if you want to have a conversation about that.
I would go ahead and amend the work plan to have a work session on the 13th.
Okay, so the 13th.
All right, as I hear great big moans.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I think we need the time.
Yep.
Okay. You also have the proposed 2018 work plan. I don't know if it's part of the original packet, but it was definitely in the data folder. And again, I'm not going to go through virtually every item. This is a really long list, but we'll talk about key items. One is under the Adaptive Management Program, where it says the SEMR Master Project Schedule Compliance Review. Some people have questioned why is that there. That is part of the settlement agreement rulemaking where if the board determines that we are falling off the schedule, the master project schedule, the rule holds that the board needs to make a decision to inform the federal services that we were not on schedule. Now, this doesn't mean that we're going to be off schedule, but this item is on the list in the event that that does happen, and that is an action that the board would need to take at that office meeting. Again, point out the PHP recommendation from the science technical experts that is here. It's at your February meeting. A lot of discussion today. You know, it's just pointed out the low impact template. Right now it says May. Now we made this recommended work plan before we had our last subcommittee meeting on the template, and I would propose that we move it from May to November because of the changes in how we're addressing the science and the ISPR review. Going down to the annual reports, Mark Hicks gave you the Clean Water Act assurance report today. That is because we ran out of time this last August meeting. Normally, the board receives reports from all of the entities that report to the board at your August meeting so that you have an idea of what the next calendar year holds for each of those entities. That would include the Clean Water Act assurance. It's also the policy co-chairs in the August meeting traditionally give an idea of what policy you'll be working on in the next calendar year. So we're moving that back to make sure that we honor the August schedule. That way you have time before the November meeting to be informed as to what people believe could occur during the next calendar year. I've already addressed the compliance monitoring 2014-15 biennial report. That will be at your February meeting. Right below it is the compliance monitoring 2016-17 biennial report. So we kept pushing back the 14-15 to the point where you're going to get back-to-back reports from the compliance monitoring program. Although I was just informed it's actually May for that report, not August. So there's another change. You heard my report on the Spotted Owl Conservation Advisory Group and the action you took. That is also traditionally August, so we're moving it back to August. This year's August meeting kind of pushed a whole lot of things off of the agenda, so we're looking to put them back at the August meeting. And I just got ahead of myself. The policy committee priorities, that's also August. I'm moving now down into the board manual development. This year, when we were getting reports from the results of the pesticide work group, originally it was asked of staff to amend board manual section 12, the forest chemicals board manual, and bring it to the board at the board's May meeting. This morning the chair said maybe later, so I don't know if you wanted May or actually November.
So, well, this is a staffing issue, isn't it?
It is.
Is that my impression when pesticide work group reported out is they would not take it up until after the water typing manual was completed.
Okay.
So, be that as may, you tell me what the date ought to be based on that.
November would be much better for staffing, but this May was the date that had been talked about earlier this year.
Okay.
Oh, and we have another thing. So if I can go.
This is adaptive management in action.
You'll see how light I am on my feet.
Okay, so I'll take the second one I got first. Yet another change. So I'm going back to compliance monitoring report. This, the 2016-17 report will actually be at the August meeting. So that will be the, as part of that large group of reports that the board traditionally gets at the August meeting. So if you could change the 2016-17 biennial back to August, which is what we had, that's the correct date. And we had forgot to include as part of the adaptive management program the Hard Rock study. That would be coming to the board at your August meeting. Sounds like you, you need to have a two-day August. I did.
Well, I'll tell you right now, if in fact Hard Rock was coming to the August meeting, I would actually assume that we would need a work session, because that's a huge amount of material that the board would have to consider.
Okay. So would it be August 7th, 8th?
That's tentative, assuming that policy stays on track on that.
Okay.
And how likely is it?
I'm not trying to question. I'm just saying sometimes there's reality, particularly all the work we got to do on water type thing. Even though policy is done with water typing right now, those same players that are involved are going to be involved in the stakeholder processes, right, writing the rule of the manual and so forth.
Right. So in continuing as board manager development, so I'd already talked about board manager section 23. Part one is to add that right now. Again, when the board deliberates on draft rule for, you know, to adopt rule at the same meeting, then the board would look at the associated guidance and board manual and approve that guidance. So that is scheduled for August. The other part Mark Hicks talked about, which is also in board manual section 23, the perennial stream identification. That is the how to find it, the most minor perennial floral. That's the type of N issue that the policy had been addressing for years. With the board approval of this part of the board manual, then that would be the completion of that clean water item milestone for the type N. The policy did take action to put that the final development of that part of board manual section 23 to DNR. DNR will convene a traditional stakeholder group and will initiate the process to complete that part of the board manual. That would be November, and again, that is staff issue as far as time, and the fact that, as the chair just pointed out, it is pretty much the same group of people that help do all of these, all of this work. I would believe that in this manual that not only would we need technical expertise, but we would need the attention of the policy members. And so, though we have good agreement on how we want to finish that manual, we still need to convene the stakeholder meetings and hold the meetings and then develop the language. So that would be November of this year, next year, 18.
So from your standpoint, you don't think we can do this in one fell swoop, both sections, from a staffing perspective?
There is going to be, and you heard earlier that, you know, there is some growing concern over the fact that for the water taking room, we do need to have language as well as the cost benefit analysis, SBEIS, SEPA, and guidance. We could try, but I think the reality is the priority should be part one of the board manual. Make sure that we're totally complete with the type FN break. If we are able to, we could make a complete
complete manual, and I don't think it would hurt if we come in on one of these ahead of schedule, but I think the reality is that if it takes a little extra attention, that November would be good.
Okay.
Board man.
Yeah.
I have a, I know, it's afternoon. I have a question. I'm getting a bit confused. In August, what you're saying is you're going to have the field protocol to locate the new rules for type F.
That's correct.
When are we voting on that? I thought that was in August.
Yes.
Well, how can you have the field protocol if we haven't even approved it yet? Nor have we looked at the study plan.
So, for your clarification, we would both basically approve the new rule and adopt a new manual to implement the rule at the same meeting.
But doesn't that presume that the rule as presented is going to be passed as is?
Yes. Yes. But, you know, we've got a lot of work to do. I mean, once we have the PHBs identified in February, the stakeholder processes can start both on the draft rule and the manual.
And the study plan comes when in this process?
May, for the validation study.
Right.
Yeah.
What I'm getting at is in order to do a realistic cost benefit or some sort of analysis, that we have to know what the decision is. And so having the decision on the same day as you present the rest of this stuff presumes that the decision's already made.
Well, so we're required by law to do the cost benefit analysis and the small business economic impact statement and SEPA in order to file with CR 102 in May.
Okay.
And then we do the public hearing stuff. And then we make a final decision based on those comments in August.
I might add to I think part of your question is the guidance in order to implement the rule at the May meeting, you'd want to have that as well. So you don't just have a draft rule, but you also want to see how you're going to do it on the ground. And there will be a draft, those elements within the board manual that you'll need to have in order to not only evaluate the draft rule, but how to implement on the ground, you'll have that at the main meeting as well. So the board has approved the FHAM. I know people want to change that, but I'll say it. As well, you know, we will have the PHBs, so you'll have a complete FHAM, including what the PHBs at the February meeting. Then the FHAM itself, including the PHBs, a draft of that will be made available at the same time as the draft rules at the May meeting. So the board will be able to review all of that information and then make a decision whether you want to proceed and initiate the formal rulemaking with the filing of the CR 102. Now, some of the difficulty is as if we get comments or information that would lead us to want to modify the rule before we bring forward a rule for the board to approve in August, we would have to also change the guidance in order to implement the rule. So, it's going to be a very busy spring and summer.
Did you have something to add, Phil?
I don't think I need to.
Okay. To guess what Phil's going to say, the board manual does not have to follow the Administrative Procedure Act, but the board manual, you know, if you follow the guidance in the board manual, you should be able to implement the rule. So we need to show you what the guidance will be in addition to the language in the rule.
So just to be clear, Board Member Nelson, going back to Forest and Fish Days when we were negotiating that, the board and DNR staff and other stakeholders made a commitment that
whenever possible, if we're going to change a rule, we want the guidance on helping landowners to understand how to comply that rule, how to be in compliance with that rule, the different methodologies that they might use to comply with that rule, to also be put in place at the same time so there's no lag once the effective date of that rule happens. And it also provides a more complete training component so that when we put the rule on the ground, we're not only training on what the rule means, but ideas on how different methodologies for you to actually implement.
That makes sense. The part that I wasn't getting was that the draft rule was going to be out in May after the meeting, that there would be some sort of a proposal. So they've got from May to August to analyze the effects and get the guidance document. And that's kind of the answer I was looking for.
Actually, if I may, the cost-benefit analysis and environmental impact analysis that is done at the time of rule drafting occurs,
they have to,
and the 102 occurs, are only preliminary analysis.
Yes, right.
Because if the rules change at the time of adoption, then those analyses may have to change as well.
Right.
And those analyses have to be complete by the time the rule is adopted.
Right. So that's when I said earlier that those have to be the preliminary, that they're based on what the board has, the elements that the board has approved for the rule now. So you will get a preliminary cost benefit analysis. In other words, when the PHBs come in as you recall at the August meeting, with the PHB, they were able to tell us what the average distance would be by auction, and from the DNR model point to where the PHB would move it to. We will have information from which we can do a preliminary cost-benefit analysis, and it will be looking at all of the effects as we know it. For the board-approved elements for the new water typing system rule. So you will have that at stage preliminary. We make adjustments to it based on any changes that come up during the formal rulemaking under the Administrative Procedure Act, and then you get another cost-benefit on the day that you're looking at the rule to adopt the rule and approve the mandate. So you get it twice.
Okay, thanks.
Board Member Davies.
So just to clarify then, am I not seeing it, or is the CR 102 for stream typing in May, is that on here? Should that be on here?
It's on there.
Is it?
Okay. Yeah, we're not, we just put the final rulemaking as August. We could break that out if you want and do water typing in two parts. So we haven't traditionally done it. Normally the work plan shows it reflects the board meeting in which we expect the board to adopt the rule.
But we have to approve the 102, so that makes sense.
Right. I mean, if that is helpful for the board members, we could break each rule out further. Each one will have two board dates on it, the date that the board would initiate formal rulemaking, and then the date in which we expect the board to adopt the rule. We could do that.
Sounds like that's a desire for our board members.
It would be helpful.
Okay.
No, that's not the issue.
Okay.
It's just changing practice.
Right.
That's all it is.
Right.
So it doesn't push us to a 3-day meeting.
by the way, this is the board's work plan. So the staff will reflect on the work plan, how the board would like us to put down things. And if it's easier to track, we can do that. Before we get down, we've kind of done the rulemaking. Field tour is on the work plan right now. It's italicized to be determined.
I don't know if the board at this time wants to discuss next year's field tour, if you're going to have it, or when.
What's going to happen?
And where you're going to have it, but just know that it is still part of the work plan. Again, the work plan is a living document. At every one of your meetings, we always go at the end of the meeting based on decisions made by the board, on emerging issues and things as they get accomplished. We can always amend the work plan, but it is here right now that there is a field tour for calendar year 2018.
So my suggestion to board members is I would suggest we have a field tour probably after the August meeting. Don't know, but like in the fall, and between now and then, we think about what topics board members would like to hear about, and then from there, we can determine the best place to do that. I would suggest probably a West Side field tour next year, but what topics we would cover exactly based on what gets accomplished between now and then, we can determine that at a later time, but I would suggest we just put a fall dates on there.
And so I was not going to highlight any more on the work plan other than again, there's a lot of repetitiveness in the work plan, like in the last quarterly reports, we're maintaining the current list of all of the items that are reported on there at every board meeting. So with that, I'll pause and field questions.
Any other comments? What member of the board?
This isn't a question. I guess I'm struggling with how do we get at some of the issues that were brought up on the field tour about forest health and the riparian area and small forest landowners. I mean, we heard some very interesting discussion there. I think it kind of piqued our interest, but we have this very ambitious work plan already in front of us. How do we take that on, or what's the first step in putting some more attention over there?
Thank you for that question.
I think what you heard me ask in Tampa, and in consultation with the policy members.
Oh, I didn't hear what you said, I'm sorry.
Bring back a suggestion on how to approach this.
Okay.
And they have a subcommittee that's already working on budget, how we're going to get what's already a full plate done. And so, I would ask they bring that back in February meeting.
Okay, great. Great, thanks.
And we can reflect that in a little bit. How about that?
Yep.
The AMBA will engage with policy to discuss a manner in which to address the Eastside issues and report back to the board at the February meeting.
And to be just, what questions we would address, how we would go about doing that, you know, that kind of stuff. Timing, science, that might be.
Why don't we do fire and health?
Forest health and a wildfire. Let's say recommendations for process. Process and timing.
And I wasn't paying attention. Did you capture everything as I was speaking? Oh, wonderful. That was a huge list.
Any other comments from board members on your work plan?
Just one comment along with it. It has to do with the West Side template recommendation. I mean, we just pushed it back to November of 2018. We heard testimony that they're about 3 years overdue. So, I mean, I'm sensitive to the fact that we've had people that come to these meetings every single time say the same thing. When are we going to get our template to have adequate review? And we just kind of quietly shoved it back to a year from now. So I'm a little sensitive to that. I think if, when we get around to priorities, we need to keep that in mind.
Board Member Sabine.
So I appreciate that, and I've been feeling the same way. I did have a good long conversation with Stephen and Miller last night, and there, on the one hand, there seems to be an understanding about the length, a sense of frustration about understanding the length of the science review, but it raises questions to me about, is there some other pathway? I mean, I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with the adaptive management process here. I think it's going the way it should, and it's kind of a complicated template, but to me it raises a question, are there other routes to get the small landowners what they need? You know, a simpler approach to start with. I won't go into detail, but I think it's worth asking the question for everybody involved, obviously, including first and foremost, small forest landowners. It's like, well, we've tried to go down this path, going down this path and using adaptive management the way it's supposed to is leading to this extended timeline. Is there something else that we can do that gets them some satisfaction at an earlier point in time?
I agree totally.
So with that thought, what are you asking? Or are you asking staff to explore an alternative?
Yes, I mean in consultation with the small forest landowners and the other stakeholders. I mean all stakeholders have a stake in how this plays out, right? because of the size of that estate. But, and I know that it goes on the work plan, but I think it's on sort of everybody's mind, so it's just a recommendation.
I agree, and I'm not sure it's something we want to throw back to our staff. I think it's something we need to recognize, put it back to the small landowners, think outside the box, come back with, is there another way that you can meet the same thing? And I agree. They would know best anyway, so.
Okay. So we have pulled out the line around the template. Is there, would you want another row put in with a request from WFFA or the small forest landowners, or?
I think we just made it.
I'm reflecting on
that. Have you listed on that?
And I'd be hesitant to do that until we actually ask them to think, you know, creatively and come back, and is there another way you want to do it? Do you want to stick with the template, that sort of thing?
So you use like a report or something that would be due?
Before we put it into that, I mean, that thing, frankly, we just changed the dates anyway, so why don't we just ask them?
I'm just wanting to be real careful before the board, you know, takes action on the work plan, that we have captured every request from the board.
So let me suggest we bring Steve Parma up here before we vote on the work plan and get his response to this. Because I'm not hearing that we want a singular answer, but it has to be an answer that is in consultation with the other stakeholders as well.
Well, we, Steve Armeyer, Washington Farm Forestry Association, we welcome the discussion and the what several board members have talked about, the fact that they're recognizing part of our frustration about the process. We have been following the process as we see it with the help of DNR and other stakeholders, and we'd welcome an alternative methodology to move it along sooner, but we don't want to derail or circumvent the way the rules work.
So I would, I, you know, as far as staff or TFW policy, spending some time talking about either alternative methods or approaches that we could look at, I support that. I maybe put in there a February report out about this that we've explored. I think that might be enough time for us to explore it. And we may come back saying that, you know, we don't know what the results are going to be. So I appreciate the offer, but you know, I don't know how, we might still be talking about this in November, the way we currently have it scheduled. As part of the subgroup that's looking at the small force finder low impact template, we've been working with the town of Makita small force landowner office and with Mark Engel as far as that mining of the data that we talked about of the alternate plans that exist that over the last 5 years, which we helped mine the data with DNR. And we've identified the potential opportunity for two templates. The data is very wide, but heavily geared towards alternate plans of this were associated with hardwood conversion and fire salvage. There wasn't very much about just a normal clear-cut, even aged harvest activities. And so as part of that data mining, we thought it might be helping as far as getting moving further along on the alternate plan path of looking at our small forest line under template. There's the opportunity to use that mine data to look at two discrete templates, when possibly a hardwood conversion, which, you know, is something that is done fairly regularly across the state. For small forest landowners, and then the possibility of like fire salvage or something else. Comment, okay, that's right. Comment for conversion, or not conversion, excuse me. What is that? He has the right term.
There has been work in recent years on conifer restoration template, which is, I think, the more PC way of saying hardwood conversion. And there was a lot of very good work. It was a template that was mostly done. We've discussed bringing that back and furthering discussions to see if we could finish that template, as well as several years ago. Right now, there's the rule holds that there's a DFC has two options, the desired future condition. It's there's two options that you can do in Western Washington. One is where you measure the trees and then you leave those closest to the water, or you can go in and do a little thinning. It's inner zone harvest, no harvest within the core. The rules now hold that you do either option one or option two. We had explored a template, and in fact, a version of that template came to the board several years ago where it would be a combination of both for small forest landowners, where you would leave the trees close to the water, and that way you'd be able to harvest a portion of the inner zone, and then again, the remaining portion. So it actually would give small forest landowners the advantage of both options one and two. We have discussed bringing that template back to the table to discuss as well. Now this though would be with a caveat of not stopping the current evaluation of the template as brought forward through the proposal initiation. But there is full intention to complete that evaluation and to bring recommendations. But in addition to that, as board member Nelson has suggested, we are looking at perhaps some breaking apart. There's nothing that says that we can't have, you know, a whole list of templates within Board Manual Section 21, allowing small forest landowners, based on what riparian force they have on their property, to apply the template that best fits their property. So
There is a possibility for us to look at two templates. One to address those that have a hardwood dominated riparian forest with evidence that it at one time supported conifer, and that would be the restoration of conifer and allowing them to remove the hardwood in preparation for that, as well as a combination of both options for DFC and Western Washington.
And my only comment about that is that's a path forward, but it doesn't cover all the identified prescriptions that we have, obviously, within the proposal initiation. So it's a positive path forward and an alternative approach, but I think we still need, I would appreciate the opportunity to work through policy subgroup to address some of the thoughts that you've had and to possibly move it forward and then report back to you in February.
Thank you. So do we want to amend the plan to reflect a report back in February from small landowners and policy about potential other templates and for methodologies to address small forest landowners?
If I may, Mr. Chair, if we say policy on that, would necessitate the subgroup to finalize some preliminary discussions and then go and carry it through policy and then have it back to the board. I don't know if it would be breaking protocol if it would be an initial report back from the policy subcommittee in conjunction with the small forest landowners. That would take a little bit of the, I think we could do that quicker than taking it all the way through.
Okay. Are you okay with that?
That's a good idea.
Okay. Not just all methodologies, but other templates. Patricia.
What now, sorry?
Alternatives. And methodologies. And or methodologies. Yeah. Leave that there.
Just put alternatives and methodologies.
Board Member Davis.
Thank you. That made me think of the last topic that we were on, the forest health topic. Did we inadvertently give policy more work on that one too? I just wanted to go back to that and check that one, the one that we were talking about before, the small landowner.
The
forest health.
Where
topic fire
yeah.
Yeah, forest health and water recommendations for process and timing. Okay, I just wanted to check who's
I assigned that to the AMPA in okay. Consultation with stakeholders.
Okay.
Which can be policy later. Okay. Are we done editing?
This is good.
Okay. So fast forward to Mr. Dean.
So sorry. we did get a report today from the
NSOIT.
Right, from the NSOIT about the statewide programmatic state harbor.
Right.
And there's the potential, I don't know, I mean, it would be nice if we moved that, I don't know, but there's the potential that we
may need to examine adjusting rules around spotted owls to accommodate this new safe harbor agreement. I don't think you've come to that conclusion, but there might be some.
You can amend and work in February.
Do that. Okay, that's fine.
Once it becomes clear what you might need to do.
All right, sounds good.
Yeah, about that.
But it's a possibility.
Okay. Although the agenda doesn't show it, because we're taking action, we generally invite public comment on the action. Is there anybody that would like to provide public comment on the work plan?
Really quickly, if I could, Chairman Scott Swanson, co-chair of policy, and also represent Washington State Association of Counties. I just came to mention the fact that your decisions that you're just making, one was to take something away from policy, another was to give us more from policy. So you are, by taking a subgroup of policy and bringing a report to you, is going away from the procedures that we just showed you in the handbook. So this time I understand you don't have it in your hand yet, but the next time, you know, if you read the handbook, you'll understand the procedural bit. So I understand and I appreciate the fact that it is your right as a board to do so. But just to remind you that you are moving away from that whole process of the normal policy procedures. So, and the other part too is I agree with Board Member Davies that yes, we did get something additional, but it was AMPA and it was stakeholders, so not necessarily with policy. So I appreciate that. Could be the same people. Thanks.
Thank you, Scott. Any other public comment on the work plan? Mary?
Mary Spurlock, I would just like to agree with what Scott said. I was enthusiastic about, well, I don't know if I was enthusiastic, but I acknowledge that a conversation needed to be had about the force resiliency issues, but I am concerned about the complexity of the issues, both from a policy perspective in terms of how that gets integrated into our the way we do business in this regulatory program, and the vagueness of the task that's been given to us. So I'm not saying that we couldn't create some meaning out of that, and certainly Hans could create some good meaning out of that, but it's very likely that what we'll have to do is give you some kind of a process-oriented answer if you ask policy and explain what our current capacity is and what our priorities are and what would have to happen in order for something like that to sort of get in the queue, depending on what the work implied is. But this is a concern that we're trying to grapple with in our prioritization subgroup now. What do we do when the board gives us new work, and how do we address that in a rational way? Particularly if it implicates the master project schedule and further research. So just as a red flag there.
Thank you, Mary. Mark, are you?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Mark Gauthier with Upper Columbia United Tribes, and I just wanted to quickly reiterate how much, at least I can speak for my position working for the three Washington State Tribes, how much I appreciate you guys coming across the curtain into our side of the mountains. And I know that it's not realistic to expect you guys to come back next year, but I just wanted to take this opportunity to just again remind you of the importance of the decisions you guys made to our tribes and how valuable it was to see you listening to, you know, one of our chairmen taking his words to heart and then walking out on one of our tribes' grounds and taking all that information in. So even if it's once every 2 years, once every 3 years, just an effort to come back to the east side of the mountains would be greatly appreciated. And I just thank you for coming over here.
Mark. All right. Any other public comment on the work plan? Thank you. Closing out public comment. Patricia, do we have a draft motion around the work plan? Board members, would somebody like to move? And please read it out loud when you do so.
Mr. Chair, I move the Forest Practice Board approve the 2018 proposed work plan as amended and amended, amended, amended.
Thank you, board members Janicki and Nelson. Any further discussion on the work plan? All those in favor of the work plan, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Same sign. Any abstentions? The motion passes. Thank you very much. And again, thanking the Kalispell Tribe for their hospitality. We really appreciate that. I would suggest we adjourn.
To executive session.
Oh, sorry. Forgot. Yeah, one more item.
There is an executive session on the agenda, and I don't know if you want to take a break for this.
Yes.
Yeah, we'll take a break.
5 minutes.
Then you come back.
So, how about this? 3:15, the board and staff will reconvene for the executive session.
Our executive session is probably going to be about 20 minutes.
Cool.
Thank you.